What's growing outside your head?
Green bits.
I'm just going to do what I do with Scott and just start it early anyway. That's good. Okay, so yeah. I'm here with Lars at Lars Clint at. Sorry, I've got to introduce you properly because normally it's the Scott Helm show. Let's not go down there. Oh. People have been coming and asking for Scott Helm stickers as well. But they've been coming up to the NDC stand and going, "Do you have any Scott Helm stickers?" And I do.
Do you have any Scott Helm stickers?
I do still have just a few Scott Helm stickers. They're still there. Anyway.
This is the entire profit of how I've been pwned goes to Scott Helm stickers.
You know what? I did actually have to spend some number of hundreds of dollars the other day to buy more Scott Helm stickers, but they're worth it. People get a lot of pleasure out of it. I'm okay with that. All right, so we are at Microsoft Ignite in Sydney. Where was it? Oh, no, I was at home when I did this last week. So actually, this is the first time that I've been able to do any recording properly with the whole thing with my own equipment too. So hopefully that sounds good. And we've tried hard to sort of do this at a time where there's not too much background noise because we are sort of in central.
Well, there's about 6,000 people in the background kind of thing, right?
Yeah, so. There are a lot. And it's like a massively high ceiling and everything like that as well. So anyway, what have you been doing here at Microsoft?
At Microsoft Ignite. So I do this weekly show for Plugu where I work, and I've been doing like an Ignite special. So I've been sticking a camera in people's faces. And then I've been...
Including mine.
Including yours. And I've also been doing a talk. I did a talk on IoT, IoT Central to be specific, which is an Azure service, which was interesting. Lots of good questions.
I actually didn't know that you did that, so this is not a stitch up. But what did you talk about?
IoT Central. So IoT Central is an Azure service. It's aimed at companies that want to get into the whole IoT space and has all the hardware and equipment but don't want to build a backend. It's a SaaS solution, which means that it's not very customizable, but it's a great way to get started with IoT in general. So I did a talk on that.
Okay.
And one in the room had ever heard of IoT Central, so that was kind of cool.
I was going to say, let me just add that to the list of things that I don't know anything about, but now I want to play with.
So everybody knows about IoT, and I used our old favorite example of what not to do, like the internet-connected toilet. I found a good example of internet-connected sandals.
Why?
Well, that's my question now is, dear viewers or Mr. Hunt, why do you think you want to connect your sandals to the internet via an app on your phone?
In Australia, I'd like to know how hot the ground is so I know if I can take let's be honest, my thongs off. Sorry, international viewers, they're freaking thongs.
It's thongs.
Would I want to take my thongs off and then walk barefoot on the road? If I could sense the temperature?
There were some other good...
of course, I could just take the damn thongs off and actually see how
you
hot
could.
It is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, just not walk on it because it's hot. There were also some other good examples that people thought, well, maybe it's to measure your weight as you walk. I mean, the things that...
If only we had a way of measuring weight already.
But those are reasonable, answers to that question.
Okay.
No. What it does, it has a little chip in it. And when you connect that chip to your app on the phone, you get newsletters.
I don't know why.
So that wasn't what my talk was about, but that was an example of what not to do. So IoT Central, check it out.
Okay. Well, IoT Central, good. I am dumber for having heard about the thongs. That has literally pushed a piece of useful information out of my brain.
Pretty much.
Anyway, talking about useful information. So I wrote two blog posts this week, and actually, did you read these? Because it's almost better if you didn't, because then I want to sort of put some stuff to you.
The one that you have on the screen here, obviously I can see, I'm cheating.
Yeah.
I skimmed and I read the headlines kind of thing.
Yep.
Because it was sort of like I'm in that situation right now as well with kids.
Yeah.
We'll get to the other one, I'm assuming. So.
Okay. Well, and this is good because I went and did an interview earlier on in this week at a local radio station. And in fact, this was going to be for like Safer Internet Day because apparently there's like one day of the year where we should think about safety online.
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
So anyway, they said, I come and do the interview, and I said, fine, we'll go in early one morning. And just before I went and did it, they said, oh, look, there's an article in the paper today about sharenting. Can you talk about sharenting? And I was like, yeah, sure. And of course, the first thing I then had to do is go and look up what sharenting was because I had no idea. But it turns out that sharenting is effectively like the oversharing of information about your kids online.
Yeah.
And that the immediate thing that came to my mind is some of these like Instagram parents who want to just have everything about their family and where they go and like how awesome they all look online, which is just, that's not my cup of tea. I don't think it's your cup of tea.
I have many theories about why you might want to do that or maybe not, but I don't think this is the right forum.
No. Anyway, so I wrote this blog post because I ended up going into the radio studio doing this. I had my 7-year-old daughter with me, so I'm starting to take Elle along to a bunch of things that I do, as well as I have Ari, my 10-year-old son, because I think that's good exposure for them. And I did get a photo of her and I and the presenters in the studio.
And then they see that you do other things, just write emails.
The problem is they see all the cool stuff. Like they see conferences like this and they're like, this is amazing. And as you and I have discussed many times, the things that we tend to share with other people and put online are the more glorious things. It'd be really boring if we were just running this while we're just sitting in a hotel jet lag, wouldn't it?
Plus, we're positive beings. Of course, we want to share all the cool stuff.
Anyway, so here's the interesting bit, and this is why ABC Radio wanted to talk about sharenting, because there was an article in the Courier Mail newspaper. And I'm just going to read you like the opening paragraph of this, because when I heard this, I thought it was a little bit batshit crazy, if I'm honest. So here it is. Parents should ask their toddlers for permission before taking a photo, the federal government's e-safety watchdog warns, in the wake of over-sharenting on social media. Now, that was the line that was put to me in the original discussion. That was the line in the paper. Now, it turns out that I think there is actually some good basis for what the government is trying to say here. And the government's piece, like, you wouldn't believe this, but the media has possibly just misrepresented a little bit what the reality of it is. So my reaction when I read that is, look, I mean, all of our kids are a lot older than two, right? But when I think back to what my kid was like, both my kids were like when they were 2 years old, it was hard to have a discussion about anything, let alone the nuances of sharing their information on Facebook. Plus, it's like you're the parent. It's like you're the one who's meant to make the decisions about the things that should impact their lives, like where they go to school, what your ethical...
Yeah, what's that called again? Parenting. That's
parenting.
Right, yeah.
So to me, that just reeked of batshit crazy. Now, when I did actually share this online, and it was interesting actually, because there are two different schools of thought that came back. There was definitely the batshit crazy parenting or school of thought, and I would say that was probably about 50%. The other 50% was seeing more value to it in terms of a combination of, people are sharing too much online. I'm going to talk about that in a moment because I think that is a very personal thing. And there was also this... Oh boy, I'm going to try not to get in trouble now. Stuff it. There was this line of thought, which is that you should ask your kids for permission even before giving them a hug, which to me feels... Actually, let me throw you under the bus. How do you feel about that?
Completely crazy. I think I retweeted your tweet and just had some abbreviation of an expletive.
Yeah.
I can't.
There were comments as well along the lines of, you should ask them for permission. They're real people too. Look, let me, just before I jump into the 10 points, because this is really the crux of the blog post, there is a sentiment here which I don't think I'd express very well in the article, and I don't think the people... Yeah. Like, literally, I saw a couple of comments there where someone was, expletive, of course, they're real people. You shouldn't do this without their permission.
Did you see the reply from the guy that actually filmed it doing it?
Yes, and I'm going to talk about that because right at the end of the blog post, and it's a really, really fun, lighthearted end note. The bit of this which I think has... good value, and this is what the government's paper is actually trying to say, and the Courier Mail I don't think represent it really well, is that there is a lot of online sharing now done in ways that people are uncomfortable with. And look, I mean, I've certainly had many times in my life where it's like, look, the aspects here I don't want to put online. I would like you, if you're taking a photo or something, not to put this thing online.
Yep.
And really, that the sentiment of this and the sentiment of what I think people were saying when they're like, you should ask your kids permission, is that it's better to start creating a culture with kids where they learn to ask people if they're happy to have their image, first of all, their image taken, and second of all, their image put online.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. I think what upset me more is just this sort of concept that you should ask the child's permission before taking a photo. So my parents certainly never did when I was a kid. I turned out, okay, maybe not. Anyway. So there's that, and then I think that the concept that I don't know, I'm just trying to find a way of putting it without sounding
words
terrible.
Are hard sometimes.
It's bad enough on Twitter, because everything's so biteful. Look, I think the sentiment of trying to start to teach your kids that things like taking people's photos and putting them online is something you should ask permission for. When I put the photo of my daughter on this blog post, I did say to her, look, know, how about I put this online? Is it okay with you? People see it. And I reckon that discussion is just fine. I'm just not real keen on the idea of some expert coming along and saying you should ask your kids permission before taking a photo. I think that's just a little bit over.
Or a hug.
Or for a hug, yeah. What? All right, that is just crazy. That's wrong. Yeah. And I think some people are saying that because they're like, oh, you don't want to grow up creating a culture where people hug you unexpectedly. So,
why not?
Slippery slope, Lars. Let's just leave it there. All right, let me get on to the point here because I had actually been wanting to write this for some time. My son, Ari, who has been on this show before, is now 10. First year that he's been required to take a laptop to school. And it has been really interesting to look at the way the school has dealt with it and the way parents have dealt with it and some of the questions that have come up. And I wanted to sort of get stuff down here around the personal privacy side of things, the laptop security side of things, what we should be teaching our kids. Mm-hmm. And the first point I got here, and I think you'll agree with me on this, is that privacy is really personal. And when I looked at the responses, it was everything from someone going, like, no, kids, you shouldn't be on the internet, to the guy who we'll come back to at the end of this, yeah, who just like took a video of his daughter talking and then just posted it straight away. It's like, this is a really personal thing. And totally. I'm really reticent to say that anyone is wrong for either wanting everything out there or not wanting anything. Like, some of it feels a bit weird, you know, like the oversharing thing, I get that.
Yeah, I think it's a big, the real question is, do you know what happens when you put it on there? Are you okay with that part of your privacy? Because, yeah, privacy is not a fixed term, right? It means different things to different people. And for instance, as an example, I don't know if we're going to get to it maybe, but if I take a picture of my son, I tend to share him because my family doesn't live in Australia. So one of the only ways...
Because your parents and everyone are back in Denmark.
In Denmark, yeah. And a lot of friends from home for school and whatever. And so I tend to take pictures of, you know, personal things, but I don't share them with everybody. I think you talk about the settings on privacy settings and stuff on when you share things on social media. I hardly ever put pictures of my kids on Twitter, for example, because there is no privacy settings. So there's different ways that you can manage it, and again, it means different things to different people.
And Andy, we'll come back to that more too. The second point here is around us as the parents setting the boundaries rather than the children setting the boundaries. I think one of the things I felt a little bit uncomfortable about with some of the comments is the fact that children, again, I've got to be careful how I say it, like, children have a right to sort of define the boundaries around how their image is used, for example. Now, there's a lot of boundaries that we set for our kids. I mean, we choose the schools that our kids go to. They really don't have a lot of input in that, certainly not when they're this age, right?
No,
we choose what the kids should eat. Imagine if you let your kids make all the decisions on what they should eat. So I know what Ari would be doing. He'd be eating pancakes and bacon and maple syrup every breakfast. You've seen what that kid will do.
Oh, yes.
So I think this is really important. Now, I also think that there's value in being able to have the discussion with your kids and actually...
Oh, for sure. But not with a two-year-old, because you can't have that.
You can't with a two-year-old.
Right? So yeah, it's a personal thing.
Now, to your point, my point number three here was about using privacy controls liberally, because it's Facebook, and let's face it, most of the time we are talking about Facebook. Mm-hmm. Facebook, we do have a lot of privacy controls around. Is it public? Does it only face friends? Does it only face specific friends? We really should use these controls more, but I get that they're messy. Like, I'm sure you've seen people screw these controls up. I remember...
My other half does it all the time, because she just forgets.
But
you mean to share something public because it remembers that it was friends last time and then it doesn't, and it's messy.
It's really easy to do, and you know that's a mistake that you can make very, very simply, which brings me to point four, which is around assuming that everything you share is public. Mm. And I always make sure, because I have messed this up myself, and part of the reason I've messed this up is that Facebook always remembers the last privacy setting you've used. So I'll publish like a blog post or something and I'll go bam into Facebook. And then I might go to my phone and it's like, hey, share a photo of the kids. And I don't look at the little icon that's there and it's public. So I would never put anything on social media that I wouldn't be happy to have shown to everyone.
Totally. Yeah, that has to be the rule of thumb, is assume that everything will be somewhere at some point that you can't control.
And then, of course, you risk getting into trouble because people say, oh, but everyone should have the right to privacy. And yes, you do, but you've got to do your own risk assessment on this as well. And your risk assessment should be, I'm at a heightened risk if I put something on social media. And then there are mitigating controls. Excuse me. And then you've got to just decide if the impact is worth it or not.
Yeah.
All right, so that one. Now, okay, moving on to the more security things. And I kind of found, I kind of find it unbelievable I have to put this here. Number five, admin rights are not for children. Now, I was having a really good discussion with Kathy about this. You know Kathy, my sister-in-law. She does a lot of edutech stuff, spends her life thinking about kids and technology and education. And she was like, no way in the world should you ever give children admin rights over a computer. I mean...
So so my son is 14, and he's a bit of an outlier, I guess. He's a bit of an IT prodigy, so he will just find ways around it. But for my other son, who's five, I'm absolutely not going to give him any admin rights ever. But yeah, the older one does it at school as well, which is always interesting. So there are always, of course, exceptions to this, but I agree, admin rights are not for children.
I'll come back to that, but would you avoid giving the 14-year-old admin rights?
Would I avoid?
Yeah, would you not give him admin rights? What does he have at the moment?
So he has a laptop at the moment, and he's in control of that laptop.
Right.
Completely, 100%. And it's not because, it's not so much a trust issue, it's a, okay, well, he's going to get access anyway.
But that is kind of the point of admin rights, isn't
correct.
It?
Correct. So we talk about it instead. So it's an education process. Also because he's 14, it's a little bit more, he has more of an attitude of how do I do this the right way, I guess. Whereas the five-year-old would just press all the buttons, right?
So I find that Ferrari at 10, like we discussed this a lot, he's a mature kid. I still just don't... Well, there's two things here. Number one, I don't trust that he can make the right decisions yet, not because he's irresponsible, but because he's just not mature enough and he doesn't understand the industry well enough. Look, I mean, let's be honest. Most adults can't make the right decisions about what to install on their computers.
No.
And I'll give you an example of that in a moment. But the other thing is, quite frankly, he doesn't need it. You know, I mean, I've actually said to him, look, mate, that the laptop is just for school and homework and coding and things like this. I don't want you installing, I don't even want you going to the App Store and installing verified games or anything that.
So
there's a hand-me-down iPhone, you can play games on that. There's an Xbox, there's an Apple TV, there are devices. There are, you're not short of choices for games.
Right.
So I'll give you a really good example of one of the things that he had wanted to install that his mates are getting into, and I don't know if you've seen this one. This is a Chrome extension, which is the Predator extension. Now, what can you
As
do?
As in the movie?
Yep, Predator. So he's in a Predator theme at the moment. He likes the aliens. And
everything. Oh, sure, okay, yeah.
Whatever, I don't have a problem with Predator. I'm going to get in trouble for that because they're going to say 10-year-old shouldn't be watching Predator. But anyway.
But it's so out there, so.
So what you can do, this page isn't loading now, but anyway, what happens with the Predator extension is it can theme Chrome so that you get like a Predator on your desktop.
Why don't you just put a Predator on your desktop?
Yeah, which could just be a wallpaper, right? I think it does a couple of other things.
Oh, okay.
Now, here's the fun bit, right? So to put this wallpaper, like, on your desktop, these are the rights that the Predator tab needs. Now, you read this out, and I'd like to hear your candid reaction as you read this.
Holy beep! Yeah, that's not... I wouldn't give that to anything, pretty much.
All right, so for people listening, maybe not reading this, what can it do?
Read and change all your data on the website you visit. Replace the page you see when opening a new tab. Yeah. And read and change your browsing history.
Oh, what could go wrong?
Yeah, it's fine.
And this is the thing, like I've said this so many times before, like browser extensions have massive, massive, massive power over your browsing habits.
But it's like when you install an alarm clock on your phone and it needs access to your contacts and your pictures and your, like, this whole list, right?
So. It's like there's a new fart app. It would like to be able to identify your location and listen to the surrounding environment. So, whatever. So this is a perfect example because you think about what it's like for a kid and a bunch of his mates at school where their parents are just normal parents and wouldn't have thought about this. They're now running the Predator tab, which can now track the browsing history of children. And here's the other thing, and I put a link in here to one of my previous tweets about it. What happens, let's imagine the creators of the Predator tab are legit. I do link to some stuff which frankly makes me question whether they are. Let's say they're legit, and then someone comes along and says, hey, you guys have got like 10,000 installs. I will give you 10 grand for your tab. Was your tab, your extension. And they go, oh, sweet, 10 grand, that would be quite nice. And now, someone puts malicious stuff in there, auto-updates, and they start mining browsing history or something like that.
Why, even if
you can trust it today, it doesn't mean you can trust it tomorrow.
Why would anything need access to the browsing history? Anyway.
Because your data has value and they will sell it.
Yeah, but Chrome allows it. Anyway, that's a different discussion.
Moving on. Number six, native digital parental controls are free and easy. So one of the things that has bugged me in the past is seeing schools push commercial products. Now, they're either commercial that the parents pay for it or they're commercial that the school has stitched up a deal and they're trying to push the product down.
And the parents still pay for it because anyway.
Well, the parents pay for it in a different way because maybe it's then the child's data. So there are native parental controls in all the major operating systems that do a heap of good stuff. I use them on the hand-me-down iPhones that my kids have. I use them on the laptop that my son has. And I mean, you can see here, this is a screen cap from my iPad about the controls on Ari's phone. So downtime, 8 p.m. to 7 a.m., can't use it then.
So you have like a family group where you can control this
through?
Correct,
correct. So there's app limits, so you can set time limits on a per app basis, communication limits, so who he can communicate with. Apps that are whitelisted that can circumvent that. So for example, the phone.
Yeah.
So we've had times where we've been away and I might go, matey, I'm gonna leave you in the room, go downstairs for a bit. You've got the phone, call me if you need to. I want that to work anytime.
Yeah.
Content restrictions as well. And then of course things like you can disable their ability to change the PIN code so that they can't either accidentally lock themselves out or stop me from getting in and looking at what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, all that sort of stuff. And it's built in, it's native, it's easy to set up. And parents really, really infrequently understand that it's there.
So I've seen a lot of Chromebooks coming along because they're cheap.
Yeah, I was asking Kathy about this the other day.
Yeah, how does that work with this? Do you know?
So I don't know what controls Chromebooks
sure
have.
Either.
If you do know, leave a comment. But yeah. I was asking Kathy about this because she goes to a lot of different schools and she sees what they do. And I said, you know, I found it a bit interesting that Ari's school said, the laptop that the boys require, is it at a boys' school? The laptop that the boys require must be a touchscreen. And I was like, okay, well that just immediately rules out all the Apple devices, which on the one hand is a bit hard, but then on the other hand, it's like, imagine what it would be like for a teacher if a bunch of kids are on Apple devices and a bunch of kids are on Windows, and, you know, so I kind of get that. There are obviously a lot of schools that go all in on Apple as well. I think my daughter's school will be Apple.
Massive investment to have all Apple devices as well, right?
It is, but the parents are paying for it because there's a BYOD model.
Yeah, but still, yeah, okay.
And then the schools are a massive investment, so it's kind of like, yeah, okay. But I know, I was asking about Chromebooks, and she said, look, one of the problems for educators is that there's just not a lot of apps and things that you can run there because it's effectively a browser. People are going to pop up and tell me how wrong I am with that, but regardless, apparently we're not at least, well, I was going to say at least in Australia, but she gets all over the world, apparently not seeing a lot of Chromebooks. Anyway, so parental controls are there and they're native, and I would really like parents to use what is there natively before going and spending money on other controls. And one of the points I make here is that there's a bit of a fine line between parental controls and stalkerware. Stalkerware being the software where, let's say you're an abusive partner in a relationship and you were trying to track where your other significant other was traveling and see all their phone calls.
It's all there.
All of that is the same sort of stuff that parents use to track their kids, and there are multiple instances of those ending up in Have I Been Pwned. And
maybe there's like a watch you can give your kids.
Oh, geez, don't go down there. I have seen, because of the nature of data breaches, ending up with a whole bunch of photos of people's kids and audio recordings and things like this floating around all over the net with the web because of stuff like stalkerware.
Yeah.
And I've made a comment in here, so Eva Gulperin from the EFF has been working really hard to try and stamp out stalkerware, particularly as it's used in abusive relationships. And it looks like a bunch of stuff now is either being banned from the App Store or gets picked up as malware.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, it's just nasty stuff.
Yeah.
So that's really important. And then the next point here, number seven, I said your children are probably smarter than you. And I've got this classic example here. I'll read you the tweet. So this is a tweet I sent in April last year. So, as I just mentioned, my son has parental controls on all these devices. I mentioned what the iPhone ones were. So this one day, I've seen him, in fact, it wasn't just one day, but I've seen him multiple times. It's like, mate, you're on your phone for a long time watching YouTube, and I feel that you have exceeded the time limit, yet you are still watching YouTube. So I'm just going to read you the tweet. It says, I'm a responsible parent, so I use the controls on iOS to limit screen time on the old iPhone my 9-year-old uses. A whitelisted exception is iMessage. He's worked out he can send someone a YouTube vid, then watch it in iMessage to circumvent the control. So proud. Like, if I can't get this right, and it's not that I'm some genius, but I just think about this a lot of the time.
Actively think about it.
And my son can circumvent that.
Yeah.
What's it going to be like for other
That's parents? What I'm saying with my son. I work in the industry. I don't do security like you do, but he will find a way. So I'd rather educate him about why he shouldn't do things or do things. But.
And you made the comment before that something along the lines of no substitute for parenting. And this is kind of where I'm going with this comment, which is like, parental controls are great, but they're going to see porn, they're going to see gore, they're going to see things that you don't want them to see. They're going to have conversations that you don't want them to see. They're going to have the same conversations that you had when you were a kid with your friends, and they're going to do it digitally.
Totally.
And it's going to happen. And I this actually brings us down to point eight here, the digital parental controls and other substitute for actual parenting.
I
want to have my kids in an environment where I can observe them using the devices as much as possible. I want to chat to them about this stuff. My kids have certainly asked before. They've said, you know, hey Dad, like, what's porn? Because they've heard it mentioned somewhere, even if it's like on the radio or something. And I don't mind whatsoever having that conversation with them and doing my best to sort of keep it out of their view.
That's right.
But recognizing that they're going to see that and all the other sorts of nasty things.
You can't completely remove it.
Yeah, frankly, I'm much more interested in their ability to deal with it in a mature fashion than I am about trying to somehow magically keep it out of their view altogether, because it's just not going to happen. They will find a way. Interestingly, when I was looking at the school acceptable use policies for BYOD, they're actually pretty good. And there was a lot of stuff in there around things like, you know, the boys should not bring 4G devices that they can tether the BYOD device with into school, because obviously they're going to be doing a lot of filtering at the firewall level at school.
So they thought about it.
There was bits and pieces in there. It was around things like, that they shouldn't, I don't think they were really specific, but they shouldn't use controls to try and circumvent photos. Jack. Hey, Jack.
Hi, Jack.
They shouldn't use controls to try and circumvent effectively the network level controls that are in there. So I imagine that they're probably going to be doing things like blocking Tor connections and VPNs and stuff like that.
You'd think so, yeah.
And then there was a bit of stuff along the lines of if the boys see something which they shouldn't, and I think they can probably use a bit of common sense as 10-year-olds, that they should immediately take it off the screen and talk to a teacher. So, okay, that's reasonable. I'm okay with that.
So they realise that it can happen and they go, well, just tell us.
They recognise it and it will. I guess we'll just have to see what that looks like in execution. But my hope would be that if the kids come across stuff like that, because it is the internet after all, that the school deals with it responsibly as well and says, well, it is the internet after all, the stuff's out there, let's have a chat about how we're going to deal with it responsibly.
Yeah.
Anyway, real parenting. Now, number nine, this is an interesting one. And this is actually, when I sent this to Kathy for review, this is a point she gave me. It's not about screen time, it's about what they do on the screen. And I think this is really important, because there's a bit of a view amongst some that all screen time is screen time and it should be minimized and they should be outside playing in the sun.
I've heard that many times.
And I imagine you see with your kids some very good educational practical uses of technology.
Oh, heaps. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So that, you can't sort of bucket that in there with watching other people play games on YouTube, right?
And I don't have a problem with my son watching 10 minutes of YouTube for kids, if that's, you know. But if he starts doing it for 4 hours, maybe we have a problem, right?
And that's where actually the parental controls are good, not necessarily just to block the usage, but also to be able to monitor the usage, so I can see how much time is spent in different apps.
And it can absolutely be a reward as well. If you're talking about parenting, it can be a reward to have that 15 minutes of screen time, right?
So one of the things I discovered here is Ari started looking at screen time, so I've got a 1 hour cap. And my intention with the 1 hour was like, if I'm just, let's say I'm working or something and he's sitting there and he's on the phone or whatever it may be, and time gets by, at least bam, that you'll get to the point where he's going to be cut off.
Sure.
He started looking at that as a goal. He's like, I need to achieve my screen time goal today and achieve my 1 hour. If I don't meet my 1 hour, I have failed as a child or something like that.
Or he has actually lost some value.
Something like that.
There were 20 minutes he didn't use, he could have used.
So that was the sort of penny that dropped for me. So what I ended up deciding, and I sort of had this chat with him, is I said, look, what I want to do is leave all the devices with me. A little bit different with his laptop because he's doing homework on there, but we've got the rule about no games and things.
Sure.
So, you know, the iPhone, leave it with me. We'll leave it on charge. I normally like literally power it down now as well.
Okay.
So he's not getting dingy messages and things. And when you want to use it, come and talk to me, and then we'll decide, like, is this a good time for you to use it, or should we go out and have a hit of tennis?
That's right.
Should we go for a swim, something like that? And I'd much rather that. I just don't want it to be like a default go-to device.
No.
Now that brings me to number 10, which I think is a positive spin on this. So number 10, technology is a joyous thing to be shared with your kids. We obviously love technology. I've seen you've got a lot of technology things around your house. You've got kids of sort of good enough gaps in ages to be able to be doing cool robotics things with
totally.
The older one.
And I was just about to mention that actually. We got this little Cosmo robot and they can both use it, but it's different use cases for both. And it is a joyous thing. Little robot, you control with an app and he talks to you, he plays with you. Like, it can absolutely be cool.
I just dismiss unreservedly comments from people saying kids should be outside playing, not on a computer, as if it's some sort of a binary thing. Like, that's
I was on a computer
ridiculous.
Lots when I was a kid. I mean,
well, but yeah, I mean, I was when I got a bit older as well. I really wasn't into it when I was younger, believe
really?
It or not. Not till I was about 14.
I bought a Commodore 64 when I was 8.
Wow, okay. Now, my earliest memories of computers was when I was in probably grade 6, so I would have been probably about a year older than Ari now, about 11. Mm. And I just remember being so frustrated that my mates were inside in the classroom on the computer and I just wanted to go and kick the footy.
Yeah, fair enough.
And look how it turned out. Anyway, but I do get outside a lot, so. So the last thing here, there's a tweet from James Roper, and I've embedded this with his permission. I know it's a public tweet, but I asked him anyway. It's a little video of his daughter, and you just got to watch it because it's hilarious. So after I tweeted the Courier Mail bit about you got to ask your two-year-old permission,
so good.
He's done this video where he's videoing his daughter, and he's like, you know, hi, can you know, is it okay if I put this on the internet? And she's just like, goo goo gaga. You know, he's like, okay, do I have your consent? And it's just, it's super cute and it's super innocent, and I don't think she's going to grow up damaged by it. Anyway, have a look at it. It's fun. Yeah. But I did ping him privately and said, look, that was hilarious. I'm just going to I'm going to avoid chiming in on that discussion on the public thread. Do you mind if I put it in the blog post? And he was like, yes. All right. We've actually gone quite a while on that, but I think it's a really important topic.
I was about to say I don't mind because it, yeah. If you have kids, technology will be part of their life.
I am really interested to see how it goes with both the kids' schools, and I don't know if you're finding this, given you've got one kid a bit older as well.
Mm.
When the rubber sort of hits the road around things like we want to install this piece of software on the computer. Hey, he can't. He doesn't have admin rights.
Yeah, that hasn't been a problem for me yet. So.
But mind you, I actually want to go and talk to the teachers, and without doing a don't you know who I am sort of thing, like I'd like to be able to talk to them and understand what it is that they want to do, and you know, is there a good way that we can do this for the kids without posing risks to them? I don't know, we'll see. Early days.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Anyway, on to something different. Have you ever used Brave Browser?
Yes, I have used Brave.
All right, cool. So what prompted you?
So this was probably a couple of years ago. I used to do a podcast. I did about 50 episodes, 55, something like that. And part of that, one of the episodes, we were just talking about what are the alternatives to Chrome, IE, or Edge, and Firefox.
So when you're still using IE.
Well, some people are. Brave was one of them. I can't remember, there was a Russian one we tried.
I'm sure that's fine.
But Brave, I kept using Brave for a couple of months.
Okay.
And it's, I'm not a browser person as such. They like, they show me the website, like,
yeah, right, you're not sort of massively personally invested
no.
in
web. If I develop a website, if I do actual front-end coding, I tend to use Chrome just because of the dev tools are so good. The Firefox ones are pretty good too, so
I had had a bunch of people asking me recently about Brave, mostly because of the privacy controls in Brave. Blockers built in by default. I think it does actually have HTTPS everywhere built in by default as well, which can upgrade insecure requests to secure ones for websites that don't do their HSTS things properly, which will do that for them anyway, which is cool. And then they've got this monetization model. And I don't know if you've seen this, but if I pop Brave open on my laptop as well.
Yeah.
The monetization model has I'm going to make sure I get the terminology right here. Basic attention tokens, or BATs. And effectively it's saying, look, there's a bit of your attention that's going on a website. If this website is subscribed to the BAT ecosystem, you can give them a little bit of your BAT, which is effectively a cryptocurrency you can then convert into cash. And when you see other people's ads, you get a little bit of it. So someone pinged me the other day and they said, in fact, here's exactly what they said, because I quote tweeted them. They said, I'm not affiliated with Brave, but it is my new go-to browser. I wanted to recommend that you set up your site, have I been pwned, to allow BAT donations. I think that your community of users would love to have this, excuse me, as an option. So I did that. So when you go to Have I Been Pwned now, so you got this little triangle and a little tick that says Brave Rewards.
I'm sorry, that triangle to me meant a warning.
It's not a yellow triangle. It's a red triangle.
Yeah, which is what you use in cars when you break down. The ones you have in the boot of your car, it's a red triangle.
All right, if you're listening, Brave. Anyway, so I'll pop that up now, and what you can do is you can send a monthly contribution to Have I Been Pwned. You can let it take some of your BAT because some of your attention goes to Have I Been Pwned. You can send a one-off tip to Have I Been Pwned. And look, I wrote about this. A few of the brave people chimed in and gave some good advice about setting a few other things up, so you can donate as well via I've verified my Twitter account, the Have I Been Pwned Twitter account, my YouTube channel, things like that.
Oh, right, okay.
So we'll see. I don't think I'm going to retire on bats, which is fine. It's not
neat.
Really meant to be the point.
Yeah, it's neat.
It is neat, and if nothing else, it's very different to what the other browsers are doing.
Yep.
It, as I've sort of done with the sponsorship thing in my blog post, it's trying to find other ways to reward content creators without all the nasty stuff that happens with ads.
Totally. And on that note, I don't know if it's somewhat related. Of course, I can't remember the name. Sorry. But there's a search engine that, as you search, instead of when you watch the ads and whatever that's on there, they plant trees.
A what? Really?
Yeah. Okay. I'll find it. We'll put it in the link.
Lars will find what that is, and we'll put it in the link.
It's really cool.
Which is interesting, because I haven't heard of that one. Okay, so last thing, since we are talking about sponsors, and I do actually have sponsors that help me do what I do. So this week we've got Varonis back. I've done a bunch of courses for Varonis in the past, a bunch of free courses out there. Things like around insider threat. Insider threats. I never edit any of these. Insider threats, ransomware, that sort of thing. They're promoting their security FWD series at the moment, a brand new YouTube show from Varonis. Watch episode 1, How Far Can Wi-Fi Travel? I wonder how much Wi-Fi is traveling around here at the moment.
That's an awful lot of Wi-Fi.
There's a lot of Wi-Fi's down here.
I think people are coming back from sessions now, so the Wi-Fi is increasing.
All right, which also means it's about to get loud. So why don't we wrap it up there? Thanks for doing this one, Lars.
No problem.
Next week I'll be home on the Gold Coast, and there'll be more stuff that happens between now and then.
Oh, for sure. Never ends.
Sweet. Thanks for watching.